SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races at Santa Anita. Frank Miramonte, Steve Bick, and joining us now, Johnny D from Philadelphia, of course, from Bluebell, beautiful Bluebell, Pennsylvania, where the party, has it died down yet? Has the Super Bowl partying waned?
It wasn't any partying. We weren't in it.
Well, I did see.
They're lucky I watched it.
I did see that feature on the Chiefs bar in South Philly. That did you see that story?
That's been a popular place. We had a St. Louis Blues place too. but I guess there's all kinds of bars now.
Yeah, there was this. I think Charlie's. Is it Charlie's bar?
I don't remember the name of it.
I think it's Charlie's, and he won a ton of money 50 years ago. He bet the Chiefs over the Vikings, and part of the gig, part of the winnings went to opening the bar, and the bar was all decorated with Chief memorabilia, and his son has gone on with it, and it was a whole thing. They had a big private party last night. I guess Vermeil has been in there. A very funny story.
Oh. What do I know about Kansas City? I've never even been to Kansas.
Here's the question for you, Johnny. Let me ask you this. Good morning, Johnny D. I'll ask you this quick question. What's the real story on the Philly fans and Andy Reid? I know Steve's happy for him. How do you guys really feel over there? What's the true sentiment?
Well, I think generally most people are happy for him, and they were rooting for him. I talked to many friends of mine who were, you know, he deserves it. He's been around long enough. You know, he was a good coach. We won lots of games with him. We won the divisions. We won NFC titles, and we lost the Super Bowl. But he certainly had success here, and there's no doubt about his ability to coach. And he's a player's coach, so he's always popular with the players. So he was incredibly popular here with the fan base. And I heard you guys talking earlier, Steve's description's pretty good. You know, he wore out his welcome, or maybe it wasn't this place that got tired of him. Maybe he got tired of this place. Whatever happened, in his last couple years here, he was very rude to the Philadelphia fans. And rough with the media. And, of course, I know the media can be rough back. But he would, after games, he would not say much. He wouldn't get specific about anything. He would say, they'd ask about something that happened in the game. He'd say, well, that's on me. I got to put the players in a better position to win. He'd say, we're going to work on that. He never, you know, he didn't give of himself. And to me, for these fans, for me as a fan, I put a lot of time into watching your games and talking about the team and following everything that's happening. And you come up here with, I got to do a better job, 5 weeks in a row. It's like, well, when the hell are you going to do a better job? You know?
That's why I know the Philly fans are tough. So that's why I was wondering if.
Look, we're not tough.
Let me ask you this one quick question. Sorry to interrupt you, but. Is part of your rooting for Andy Reid the fact that the 49ers are, you know, not some love fest in the city of brotherly love?
Well, I don't think we hate.
Okay, good.
I don't have 49ers.
All right, I'm happy then in that regard for Andy Reid, because I was wondering how his old fans would feel about it.
No, I think for the most part, this town was happy for him, but he's not beloved like. You know, this city, Dick Vermeil went to a Super Bowl and lost with the Eagles. Of course, he later won one with the Rams. Andy Reid lost the Super Bowl to the Eagles and then one with the Chiefs. But Vic Vermeil is, to this day, idolized in the city. He still does, he still endorses products. The guy's been gone for 40 years. He still is doing commercials in Philadelphia. So
it makes me think of those loud calls behind the center from Mr. Jaworski. I have to cover my ears just thinking about that screaming.
And the Polish rifle is still around. He owns several golf courses in the area. My point is, this town is filled with dedicated, loving sports fans. And if you give everything you have to them, they will open their arms and they will love you. Players who give everything they have love this town. Guys who don't or have chips on their shoulder or whatever, they don't like this town.
So Steve Carlton, Greg Luzinski,
Schmitty. He's the best example I can think of. There's a guy who's a home run hitter for all time, one of the greatest of all time.
Oh, he was fantastic.
He played the game, and that was just him. I've come to learn as an adult, that's just the way he was. But this city doesn't respond to that. It looks like you don't care. And if you don't give everything you have, you will hear about it.
Nice.
That's all I know.
You know a lot more than that. You were telling me stories when we walked in here right before the Breeders' Cup that we could have just pulled up into Section N upstairs and pulled up a couple of seats and gone on for the rest of the day. I love your stories, and I've told you I love the way you write. It's very passionate, and it's good stuff.
Well, thank you, Frank.
Well, come with it now, though. What have you done for us lately?
Well, I was wondering earlier, as you were talking about Steve, I wondered how much that had cost him. I hope you're not expecting to get something from me.
No, I'm just going to get my Val Pack in the mail. That's what's coming.
That's Val Pack. That's a great reference. Johnny, our conversation leading in regarding as we wrap up Super Bowl coverage, the Chiefs were the right push. And, you know, I was trying to get – I had an envision – you know, once it became clear the Chiefs were going to win, and I had that part in the bag. Then I was, when it became 31-20, I had a path to 58, and that included, you know, the Niners getting the ball back with what was it, a minute and change, and then, you know, going down and getting a garbage touchdown and putting that point total at 58, which is what I was after. Yeah. So, but
you weren't alone. You weren't alone. The reports are you and the general public were not pleased with not getting over that number.
Well, I think the total ended up 53 or even 52.5. It went down as kickoff approached later in the afternoon.
Right.
Actually, Sunday morning it started to drop, Saturday night into Sunday morning. And there were a few people paying attention to that. Your earlier reference to 4th and 26 was interesting, and in fact, we were texting back and forth. Our good pal Will Schwartz, I was at the game with him and his partner, and the play happened right in front of us. The catch was right in front of us, 4th and 26 to keep the Eagles alive, and it did. And we were so excited in the car. And Will said, I'm going to name a horse, 4th and 26. And he did.
That's right. That's right.
And the horse won a couple of races. Yeah. 4th and 26. But that 4th and 26 was a lot more important than this 4th and 26.
But didn't you, when I sent it to you, because you were the first person I shot it to, when I saw that and realizing the game was going to end on that, I just of all the crazy things, of all the potential, you know, down and yards that you could have had, for it to be 4th and 26, and referencing, you know, hearkening back to Reed and Eagledom, I just thought it was crazy. I thought that was the nuttiest thing.
Yeah, yeah, and incredibly weird. Yeah,
yes,
I agree. If it would have mattered, if it was a play that would have mattered, I would have been like freaked out. But since it was the end of the game, I wasn't. And plus, I was almost asleep. So.
Well, this is my first time I've been on the West Coast for a Super Bowl, and I recommend it strongly.
How about all the sporting events? How about everything? How about a World Series when you're, you know, I can't
good
stay
point.
Up anymore. My,
good point.
My DVR is on, and I have to, in the morning when I get up, even like Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, I can't watch the end of those games. The second half, I can't watch the second half. So I have to, when I get up in the morning, I have to go straight downstairs. I can't look at anything. I can't look at the phone.
Right.
I can't do it.
I love that.
Yep.
Because something's going to pop up. It's happened to me. I'm like, oh, no, you know? And especially if it turns out to be a great game, I want to see it. So I go straight down, hit the DVR, and go through the commercials pretty easily. So that's another bonus.
That's great.
Johnny, turn our attention.
I was a little upset. In fact, I had trouble sleeping. I threw my back out badly, and I was in real pain during the Super Bowl, watching Shakira and J-Lo. Gyrate. My back just went completely out.
In sympathy, and you had
I was trying to move with him, and it just boom, gone.
That brief speed faltered.
I did see where some people were aghast. I guess at
I missed aghast. The show. I actually watched the first half here at a party we had, and then went home during the show.
So there you go, perfect.
I read the recap.
Yeah, it was a good show. I mean, there were some people that were aghast, but I wasn't. I was entertained. I guess the best. My wife said Bruno Mars was the best that she's seen. But our good friend Will Schwartz sent me a text this morning because we were at a Super Bowl at the Rose Bowl. Philly guys flew out to meet me in California. We rented an RV and we went to the Super Bowl and camped out and watched and went to the game. And he sent me a clip of the halftime show. Michael Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
And he was amazing. He was amazing. That was only 27 years ago.
Time flies.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was a gorgeous, beautiful day, and I was working in that. It's funny, I was working in the exact press box that you're sitting in at that time, and I called in sick on the way to the barbecue, and when I came back on Wednesday, we're racing on Wednesday. My boss, Jane Goldstein, came out and said, "Were you at the Super Bowl?" I said, "Yeah, I was." She said, "Next time you call in sick, make sure you're not on television."
Wow, what are the odds of that?
Apparently the cameraman. We needed some tickets. We needed a ticket for my brother. And so I went into South Philly scout mode, trying to get a ticket from someone. And the one person I asked was Diane Cannon. Remember Diane Cannon?
Love Diane Cannon.
Yeah. How could you not?
The famous actress?
Right. Of course. How many Diane Cannons?
Her performance in Heaven Can Wait, which is my number one movie ever as Mrs. Farnsworth, as good as it gets. In fact, the famous thing, when they asked Mrs. Farnsworth what the relationship was like, she says, "Very, very close. Very, very special." I mean, that's, in fact, when Very, Very Stella runs in New York, and I called him a few times, my girlfriend Jennifer and I, all I have to ever say to her, if I just say very, very close, she'll either say very, very special or very, very Stella. It's part of our conversation.
That's
and
great.
And it's based on that scene.
That's great.
In Heaven Can Wait. That was fantastic.
That is too funny. You just went up to Diane Cannon?
Well, we were milling out, you know, people, she was going into the stadium.
Oh, she didn't want to. That's perfect. She wants a quick transaction and move on. She's not looking for chit-chat.
She passed, like, right in front of me. I said, Liz Cannon, you have any tickets?
That's fantastic.
My buddies still laugh about that.
You know what they say in sales? Ask for the business. There you go. Perfect.
Right, that's right. But apparently, there was a cameraman who, you know, zeroed in on me, and I was on the TV. And
that's fantastic.
That's great.
It's kind of the opposite of the guy who was at the Dodger game and was saved because they were prosecuting him for a murder. But
your attention.
Attorney found the footage of him at the Dodger game, and it was from the Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm. They were at the game filming, and he told his lawyer, "Yeah, I was at the ball game. They were filming something." Lawyer said, "What were they filming?" "Well, Larry David. He went to the production company, got the footage, and sure enough, there in the footage at the time the crime was committed." Was this guy that saved them, actually.
How about that?
I think there's a Netflix documentary called The Long Shot, I think it's called.
How about that? Well, and you know, you bringing up Super Bowl ticket stories, you got to tell everybody. Some listeners have heard this story maybe twice, but Frank hasn't heard it. So
maybe it's
going to be worth telling. Well, his mother wanted to go to the Super Bowl in the worst way, and Johnny let her down. What year was
Frank,
this?
I don't remember years. It was probably Redskins. I want to say Redskins Dolphins in the Rose Bowl.
14-7 many moons ago. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, it was in the
Johnny's 90s, old as Johnny's old as dirt.
90s, yeah. So I go out to Santa Anita in the morning. It's Super Bowl Sunday, and I'm standing on the rail, which the fence, which is still there from Clocker's Corner down to the Gap. I'm standing along the fence, and a trainer from New York, Joe Travato, was in California. He brought a string out, a couple horses, and he walked up to me, and I had met him earlier through Bobby Frankel had introduced us. This is Joe, you know, we talked and laughed, and he came up to the fence there, and he stood next to me. And this is Super Bowl Sunday morning. He said to me, "What's wrong, kid?" I said, I was a kid back then. I said, my mother's visiting me from Philadelphia, and the only thing she wanted to do was go to the Super Bowl, and I'm going to let her down. I don't have any tickets. I'm not going to spend $1 million to get tickets. I just got to tell her we can't go." So only at the racetrack could this happen. He reaches into his pocket and takes out a small stack of tickets. He peels two off and he hands it to me. He says, "Take your mom to the game, kid."
Wow.
And I mean, I was only at the racetrack. There's so many things that can happen only at the racetrack.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What a score that was.
Johnny, that's 1983.
83?
Yeah, that could be right.
Washington, Miami.
In the Rose Bowl?
Rose Bowl.
Yeah, okay.
That's perfect.
Hey, at least I got the teams right.
Did I get the final score right?
No, 27-17.
Oh, what was it? Didn't they have a 14-7 game early in their life? For some reason, I don't know why I remember that. It's a bad memory if it's that far off.
In the Rose
Bowl? There it is. Oh, the Memorial Cup. Go back to 1973.
Yeah, Miami 7. That's right. Miami 14, Washington 7. And that was that when Earl Morrill was that Earl Morrill when was that Earl Morrill?
Most of the stuff I know about those teams are based on Madden games that I've played in the early 90s. So that's believe me, that was a fluke score to know.
Frank remembers the 14-7 because he had the over.
Exactly. As Al Michaels once said, this was the best on Monday Night Football. And Jay Privman actually put me on the phone. It's the only time I've spoken to Al Michaels one day because he knows how much I love Al Michaels. He put him on the phone. But my favorite of all the many references to over-unders in his day, the best one was it was some blowout, probably like 38-0, and the total was 40.5. And then it was a field goal right at the end. And Al goes, this game isn't over. And many of you out there understand what I'm saying. And that was great. And I had a chance. So Jay one day was at dinner, and he called and said, I'm here with Al Michaels. And he put him on the phone, and I expressed him how much I loved the way he said certain things. And he appreciated that and promised to add it in, because he didn't – that particular one about many of you understand what I'm saying, he said he hadn't used that in a while, and he was going to do it that season. And that was his way of letting me know that here you go.
Frank, I got to tell you, I really enjoy your calls.
Thank you.
I'm glad you've got a great coach in Trevor, and I'm glad you borrowed so many things from – so many hints from past announcers. And that you're constantly critiquing yourself. That's really the only way to get better. Constantly look at what you're doing and analyze it and say, this works, this doesn't work. And sometimes you ask other people's opinion, the people you trust, for what do you think of this, what do you think of that, and they'll give you advice. And sometimes it's good. Most of the time it's good. But anyway, I was a little upset when you went to when you moved from AAA to the big leagues. I was a little upset because I knew we were going to say goodbye to the multi race caller impersonation, and that broke my heart.
I'm glad you enjoyed them while they were around, and I certainly had a lot of fun. That's what got me into the game. So I know the fans like that stuff. I probably think that they didn't enjoy when, like, Snagglepuss made a guest appearance once.
The Murgatroyd.
Right. I kept Snagglepuss for the Bluegrass Downs audience in Paducah, Kentucky. He didn't make it anywhere else, but I had to throw him in at one point in time. And Jack Buck, Hank Stram, and a lot of fun with those.
Oh,
and
that was an interesting graphic they put up.
They
put up so many meaningless graphics, but that was the interesting about the comparison of which two Super Bowls were they comparing. I guess it was the Chiefs.
The Chiefs, yeah, 50. Yeah. Yeah.
And the announcers were Jack Buck, who was a big racing fan, by the way. I met him in the press box at Del Mar. He used to come to the races all the time. And now his son was now calling the game.
I'm a big fan of Joe Buck's. I know Joe Buck takes a lot of criticism, but, you know, I think that that's always the case when you're in the spotlight. So maybe it's not even that much criticism, but I've seen things and people taking shots at him. But I love Joe Buck's delivery. I think it's very clear. I like the way he enunciates, and I like what he does, and he's very strong. And it's a pleasure to know that he's the son of an absolute icon, because Jack's voice was so distinct.
Absolutely. And the only drawback that I have with Joe Buck is that he has to stand next to an ex-cowboy.
Right. How about those Eagle Cowboy games during the scab days? Those were some real special treats, weren't they? By the way, I was a Cowboy fan as a kid. I know that's going to nauseate both of you, but when I was a little kid, don't worry, that ended when they fired Tom Landry. But when I was a kid, I love the Cowboys. Roger Staubach, that whole, believe me, we had some major
Jesus,
battles.
You a front runner. Unbelievable.
Well, I was, but I was watching TV. They had stars on their helmets.
You had Roman Gabriel here, and you're a, I mean, how do you grow up in LA and not be a Rams fan?
I just wasn't a Rams fan. And let me tell you this.
Yeah, Merlin Olsen.
We used to go to this place. And
the fearsome foursome.
You know, I'm a germaphobe. So imagine this at like age 8, 9, 10. We lived in Beverly Hills. There was a place called Pico Baths near like La Brea and Pico. And it was a very convenient ride to Hollywood Park from there. And my dad would go there and hang out with his friends and get like a Turkish massage or whatever it was, steam room. And I hated this
place. The Schwitz.
In fact, my friend Brian calls it the Schwitz.
Well, of course he calls it the Schwitz.
It's absolutely
what else
the Schwitz
you gonna call it?
Herb Freed, may God rest his soul, was in the clothing business and probably some other things too. He got a kick out of my eating habits being so terrible. And he used to tell me, when Seattle Slough comes here, I'm going to put you on his back. I believed him that I was actually going to ride Seattle Slough. I'm not even kidding. I really did. So I'm 10 years old. And he said, don't worry, when he comes here, let me know when he's here, and we'll take care of him. We'll tell this person. Well, he knew the way I would – he couldn't believe how bad my eating habits were, which, by the way, they haven't improved since then. And he made a deal with me. I told him the Cowboys were going to come to play the Rams. And he said, I'll tell you what, I'll get you 50-yard line tickets, but here's what you have to do. You have to eat breakfast every morning. It has to be eggs. I hated eggs. You have to eat eggs and a cup of coffee. I'm 10 years old. Or 11, maybe 12. But this way, maybe whatever it was right around there. So I said, you got to be kidding me, but I'll do it. So I started eating scrambled eggs, and I hated them. And so what I was doing is I was killing the taste of that with, like, Weber's bread, which is the equivalent of Wonder Bread, which isn't very healthy. So now I'm eating all this bread to kill the taste of the eggs. After whatever number of days it was, I called him on the phone. I had my mom call him, and I picked up the phone. I said, Mr. Freed, this is Frankie. I don't want the tickets. This guy laughed so hard. It was just unbelievable. He laughed and laughed and laughed, and he gave me the tickets. But we used to go there. We used to watch the NFL Today with You Are Looking Live, Brett Musburger, on these little tiny black and white TVs. But the problem was, if I didn't go to Pico Baths, I was oftentimes left at home. He wasn't going to come pick me up, so I had to go torture through this thing. Bunch of men walking around. I'd be going into the pool. I'm like, I'm not jumping in that pool. Sweat room, the whole thing, those sandals he had to share. These were some horrifying updates for me early on. And it just showed how much I didn't like it. What I used to tell sometimes, Dad, I don't care. I'm not coming. And once in a while, he'd come back for me because he felt bad. But, man, I would just sit there and listen to these guys. It would never end. The NFL Today would come on. I'm like, when do we get out of here? And then we were always there for the first set of changes, an hour to post with Harry Henson. So that's how I was able to learn how to recite all of his deal. Fast forward to the game. So he gives me the tickets. I go to the game. I bet $5 on the Cowboys. I remember this. I wore a blue shirt in the Rams section because it was 50-yard line tickets for sure. I went in there. The Rams blew them out. Staubach threw 4 interceptions. It was the worst day ever for me. And later on, of course, that year, Hollywood Henderson is slam dunking as they took the Rams out 28-0, and they went on. But when they fired Tom Landry, I was done with them. So I certainly understand there's no love between Eagle fans and Cowboy fans. And I'm not in the Cowboy fan department anymore. Once Tom Landry was out, I was out too. But that was a great team. The 35-31 loss to the Steelers in the Super Bowl, I was the only guy in North America who had +3.5. That was the big Black Sunday where Vegas got middled. Not me. Yeah. I had the Cowboys +3.5. Thank you, Jackie Smith.
I wonder how many fans the Cowboys lost when they fired Garrett.
They may have gained. I think they got, there was a net positive, I think.
I shouldn't laugh. We got games coming up.
That's it.
Well,
I'll tell you, the play on the field, I've said this earlier on our conversations, Patrick Mahomes he's really something. He's really a player that I hope we get to enjoy for a long time. He's not going to be young forever. I know how that works. So let's revel in his incredible athletic ability and he seems like a good citizen too, which is
very polished.
Very important. Fine young man. He appears to be a fine young man. And anyone who thought the 49ers would win, like me, but were afraid of Mahomes, definitely afraid of Mahomes, which I was. It was an interesting game because, as you said earlier, Steve, it looked like Mahomes was off. It looked like the 49ers did a great job of keeping him contained in the pocket. It kind of kept him from scrambling, except for a few times. He got outside. He was able to do stuff downfield. But the difference, I think, between the quarterbacks was that Mahomes seemed to relish the pressure and the competition and being hit. He did not back down. He was having a rough time of it earlier, but the rougher time he had, the stronger he came back. And it seemed like on the other side, Garoppolo was struggling a little bit with the pass rush and getting hit and just not. Now, they're dealing with different receivers, understood. And the one part about the game that I think young Shanahan learned a great deal in this game. You had the venerable old coach on the other side what is it, 27 years in the league, finally gets the Super Bowl, and you've got this 40-year-old son of a coach on the other side, and, you know, meeting. And I think Shanahan learned quite a bit in this game. I don't know why and you actually, we texted back and forth about, I don't know why he stopped running the ball when they got up and they had the lead. It seemed like, I know Kansas City was jamming the box, but, you know, you've got to keep doing what you're good at. And they were running their physical running team, and they got away from that towards the end. They started throwing the ball a little too much. It was predictable. Anyway, long story short, I enjoyed the game very much, except losing money. But I had the under. I was okay.
I mean, it looked like the 49ers were home. And then suddenly it just came unraveled. Imagine the prop bets, the Chiefs minus 10.5, and that was a prop bet available out there. Imagine those people. There are probably some people out there with crazy glue and tape to put those tickets back together.
I got one question. You know, Mattress Mac, who we all know and love, he owned a horse. I can't remember the name of the horse. Popular Horse.
Oh, come on, Steve. Can you look outside and please read that name out loud? Do you see the name that you see here, there, and everywhere?
Longines. 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 There's a clock. Oh, Run Happy. Run Happy. And Luc Belair.
The champagne toast.
That horse has no name recognition.
Can you believe I've never had a taste of Luc Belair? I say it 10 times a day. I should probably get a Luc Belair bottle one day and see if it's any good.
Absolutely. But anyway, Mattress Mack, he bet $1 million on the 49ers. Now, you know, after his baseball picks and his football picks, and he's either the greatest marketing guy that ever lived.
Which is very possible.
Or the worst handicapper that ever lived.
Well, here's the thing. You know, let it be known that that the general public may not understand, but the Houston Astros stuff was strictly a hedge to, and I would guess, and I cannot confirm this, but I would guess that he was actually better off financially with the result happening with the Houston Astros not winning the World Series this year, even though there's no chance he wasn't rooting for them. He was rooting for them with everything he had. But in the case of the Super Bowl, he didn't really have an overwhelmingly strong opinion. He felt it was a coin toss. He was getting plus 120, but also keeping this in mind, which was a better line than he had gotten anywhere else. But he was running a promotion again leading up to the Super Bowl, whereby so this was really part of a hedge too. So it's easy to take shots. And believe me, if I could ever truly start a service that gave out my sports picks with my true heart and like you can't like alter it thing. If I could start a 900 number right now with my true sports picks and told people to go against them and it was genuine, there would be people paying any number to dial that number, because it is amazing how difficult it is to pick out of two teams who is going to win a game. And I think that's the reason that bettors who bet a lot of games get clobbered anyway, because forget about beating the big, they're less than 50% to begin with. So it is really astonishing. Some people, and there are others too that are very successful in other areas of their life, but when it comes to actually picking a game, it's a tough thing. And I almost thought, I actually thought going into this that when the Kansas City opened as one, I thought it was almost a reverse psychology line to get the public and people thinking the Kansas, first of all, one really doesn't mean much anyway, because it's just 1 point. But I just think that the role of favorite is defined in making it that. And I thought San Francisco was definitely the right side in this game because of my theory that defense wins championships. And I thought that their defense would be, and I thought Garoppolo, if you thought of it this way going into the game, with him only having 8 pass attempts against Green Bay, he's not going, it's almost like, it's the whole thing about the NFL in general. Don't believe what you just saw the following week. Things change a week later. And in this case, I thought he wasn't getting the appropriate respect for what he would be able to do. And he certainly threw some good passes, and they ran some tremendous plays. But then when it counted, it's so hard to finish it up, and they didn't do it. And it was actually a very dull and poor performance in the fourth quarter by the 49ers. But before then, it just, if you pick the 49ers, you just figure, like, how easy was this? And then the next thing you know, you're blown out. It's just really crazy how that worked out. But keep in mind, the one thing I want to just say about Mac is I have a lot of personal experience with him dating back to when we met a long time ago. And look, he is a marketing genius beyond. And he's done that and built an empire in the furniture business based upon understanding advertising and promotion. And right now, he is very and this is a perfect, he's a perfect example where it's easy to take shots and people, look, if you look at Twitter and you see people making comments about him, et cetera, but here's the thing. He's like, if you look in like Yahoo News, they talk about famous wagerer Mattress Mac. That helps in a lot of ways. And you just never know. One day there might be a Mattress Mac casino, and you know, it'll probably be well furnished if it happens. I don't know how his promotion went this week, but I know he sold a lot of furniture with people that would end up having the 49ers.
I'm so glad you explained all the stuff behind it, because that was the reason for my comment. I gave you a multiple choice. He's either greatest marketer to ever come along or the worst, you know, handicapper. So that's why the choice was there, and I'm glad you explained all the promotions he's had, because that's an important part of it, definitely.
No question. And by the way, speaking of sports wagering, anyone who's good at picking the NBA, I want to salute them from this press box right now, because the NBA, to me, stands for nothing but aggravation.
Well, speaking of aggravating, Johnny, yeah. Let's get a couple of quick beat the host information in, and I got three chalky picks home, and any time I tried to get adventurous, I sort of regretted. I ran a lot of seconds and thirds, but always fun to be the host and beat the host.
Well, I think you got all three of the chalk picks. You got those right, but again, those races where you stepped out, it was tough. It was a little very challenging this weekend, because the total amount that a player could have won if he picked every winner with $5 win wager on each horse in 10 races, on one horse in 10 races, was $302. That was the a perfect score, if you will. Steve, you had, as you know, 28.50, and looking at the total, that 302 was the high so far for the season, and also got Kevin McFarland. His total was $200.50. He gets the $1,000 prize. John Erickson, second, $174. He got $750 additional, and Stephen Stang, $161.50, he gets $250 in prize money. And this is the second time Kevin McFarland has won a weekly Beat the Host prize. And that's a solid achievement. I really, hats off to him, because that is not an easy thing to do, especially in the space of 5 weeks. To win two of these prizes is absolutely an outstanding performance. Looking at the cumulative totals for players this year, Ruben Genovese still in front, $477.50, but Kevin McFarland closing in on him, $451. And I looked at the leader, Ruben. He's averaging $95.50 in earnings per week to get to his $477.50. And I've also taken a look at the winners, the races and the weekly winners. And it's interesting because, you know, every week is different. As we said, the weekly totals have gone, and this is a $5 win wager in each of 10 races. First week it was 146, then 188, then 268, 266.50, and then 302. So it's been on a steady climb. Except for that 1 week where 268 to 266, but still growing. And the percentages of the winning total, like that is a perfect score. The percentage of that perfect score that the winner has, the first week was 73%. The second week was 73%. third week 62%, and then 71% and 66%. Huh. So when you look at Beat the Host and you say, what does it take to win? Well, I don't know if I can tell you what the exact number is, because winners, weekly winners, have won with 107.50, 138.50, 167.50, 190.50, and 250. So I can't tell you a number, but I can tell you it's going to be roughly between 65 and 73%. It's going to be in that range. So that's what you have to aim for of whatever the total is. So let's see if that trend continues. I think that's interesting because while the winner totals have increased each week, the percentage it's because they're picking roughly the same percentage of that total every week, but the totals have grown, so the winner's totals have grown, but it's been about the same percentage each week. Anyway, that's, you can see I have too much time on my hands.
Well, and I sent you the five totals, and it caught my eye that they had increased 5 weeks in a row. And then later, and then you sent me the percentage thing back, and I got a theory as to why the number is growing. And, Johnny, you've got the access, I'm sure, to prior years. But, you know, considering that this contest focuses on Gulfstream and Santa Anita week after week, I'm going to assume that as the season starts here December 26th, December 28th this year, the Sirius Racing starts around the same time, January 1st in South Florida. My guess is that with more regular starts and as the meets are you know, getting into their continuity, the players are, you know, basically getting a better and better handle as to where they should be betting and who they should be playing.
That makes perfect sense. And then you and I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about we were talking about how many favorites were winning, how short the prices were, and that was both the Gulfstream and Santa Anita. And I think we agreed that look, if the winning favorite percentage is high, is around 40%. You know, grab onto your, or 50%, grab onto your hat because it's going down. And I think we talked about how as the horses migrate from other racing circuits, from New York, from Kentucky, you know, from wherever they come to Florida, you're going to see them settle in and start, there's going to be upsets because, the abundance of turf racing at Gulfstream really seems to, the large fields, turf racing in general, the way it happens, you're going to see upsets, and I think that we're getting a taste of that now. We're in the meat of these meetings now.
Well, and on that topic, Johnny, let's hit Jay Pribben's going to join us next, and we're going to do the Road to the Derby recaps with Jay. But your impressions of the weekend racing? What you know? How did you view the 3-year-olds, and what else caught your eye?
Well, I'll tell you one thing, and I'm sure Frank's aware of this. Racing history was made Saturday. Was it Saturday? Yeah, it was Saturday, Santa Anita, with obviously Baffert's 3,000th career win in, fittingly, the Bob Lewis Stakes. Couldn't be more well done. But the real racing history, it was Baffert's first time receiving a trophy from Steve Bick.
It's a big moment.
3,000 winners, but his first time receiving a trophy from Steve Bick. So
I feel the Stronach Group in Santa Anita felt that since Steve has been giving us so much coverage on the radio over the last year, yeah, that he should, yeah, be there for this great moment. And it was a great moment in Santa Anita's history.
You couldn't have scripted it. I mean, it was bizarre. He and Baffert. I was with Baffert on Thursday morning after the show, and you know, he was talking about, you know, hitting 3,000. Of course, he and I had that extensive conversation at University of Arizona in December, and I you know, when we'll have Baffert tomorrow, but I'm not going to spend a tremendous amount of time talking, you know, his career history, just because we did that in December with Arizona. But he did say that with that Bodie and Jill were in
Tennessee. On
Tennessee,
the way back.
And he was it was bothering him that they were not going to be here for it Saturday, but his brother was here, PA, and his son Taylor was on hand. Johnny, I assume you saw the picture. I
saw the picture. Yes. Well, that's one you got to frame, really.
Well, there was a very tall ex-football player next to me, actually, in those photographs and in the winner's circle. I didn't realize who it was until I heard someone say and call him by his well-known initials, AC. Al Cowlins.
Oh, yeah.
Al Cowlins.
Yeah, frequent attender at the races.
What kind of vehicle did he drive here?
But I'm bummed. I guess B. Wayne Hughes, very friendly with B. Wayne, and B. Wayne's son-in-law was on hand, but going back to USC days.
B. Wayne Hughes actually invited me to the winner's circle for Jimmy Creed's victory in the Malibu years ago. This would have been somewhere around 2012 or 13. I was walking in there, and I talked to him. I knew him from the days of the training races at the fairgrounds. He was out there in the mornings frequently watching his horses work, and I saw him early in the day. I said, "You're going to win the Malibu today with Jimmy Creed." He said, "If we do, come take a picture." I said, "Listen, I got a face for radio. Don't tell me that because I'll be there." He says, "You be there." I ended up standing right next to him in that winner's circle.
That's great.
That was a lot of fun. He's a guy who loves the game and was nice enough to share that moment with me as a fan. Way before I had ever called a race at Santa Anita. That was very nice of him.
Well, it was special.
You also talked about another great, as we used to call them, racing rarity. When we did the Santa Anita publicity, the Santa Anita yearbook, the Santa Anita press guide, it had many different names. We used to put it together, and there was a little piece in there that was racing rarities. And it was, you know, the last time a race finished in the exact post position order.
Okay.
You know, we run all these races.
Sure.
So one through, I forget what it was, eight or nine horses, whatever the size of the field was. And that was a racing rarity. Well, that three consecutive winners bred by Alan Poindexter, you guys talked about it earlier, touched on it. That is absolutely an amazing, that's an incredible achievement that a small breeder, two of them were Iowa bred?
Yep.
Do I have that right?
Yes,
correct.
You do.
I mean, that is just. That is just amazing. Just amazing. But as far as the racing was concerned, I mean, we're into this three-year-old mode now, and it's great. The Super Bowl ends, and you can turn all your attention toward the racing, and the three-year-olds are starting to, find their way. I make it a habit not to get too crazy about anything too early. Because these early races are very... they don't have a lot of effect because these are kind of made up of horses who are doing it now. But I want the ones that are going to do it then. So I think that the months that pass between now and then are very important, and you'll have horses moving into the picture who are moving into tip-top form and growing and maturing. These guys right now are still, I think, you know, finding their way. No better example is, Tiz the Law. You had to like many things. You had to like the pure talent that this horse has. But at the same time, he was green.
I was going to ask you your interpretation of what was going on with his head. And I'm wondering, because I haven't read any recaps of that. Have they discussed this? And again, he won easily, so it's all positive. But there are probably some things, and I know Jay will probably touch on that as well. But what were your thoughts about him and the greenness?
Well, I think part of it is when, you know, he didn't like being inside. He was in a tough spot. Now, to his credit, he did get out of that tough spot and did kick it in. But I think he overpowered that field pretty much, and the water will get deeper. Then when he took the lead in the stretch, we want to say he's green. He didn't change leads until very late. He drifted in, which, you know, you don't know why. You know, is it a soundness thing? Is he ducking away from the crowd? Is it just the way he is? Is he quirky? There's so many reasons why they'll do what he has cocked his head to the side. But what I'm trying to get at is, you can't do that when, you know, you're facing the best. Those antics, even though he was still running, but that's gonna catch up with you unless you straighten your game out. And he's had a few races now, so it's not like this was his first race or second race. He's been around the block. He's got to quit doing that stuff. Tremendous talent, though. But I'm a little tentative there. 1,000 words. Again, one of the Bafferts. I don't think he's the best Baffert. He's one of the Bafferts. I think the best Baffert right now, if I had to pick one, I would pick Nadal as the most promising, the one with the biggest upside. I know it's early for him, but that's how this game goes. You know, he's got the most room to improve. 1,000 words did what he needed to do. He ran is that the word workmanlike? He just
did what
he needed to do. And
it wasn't one of those things where he drew off. He had the room, and he just kind of gradually got there, which is fine.
Yeah, and nobody was going to catch him. You know, he just kind of – and as Steve pointed out, you know, you can – I think it was about – was it about 1,000 words? He pointed out the 24s?
Yep.
Yeah, and that certainly – but there's not brilliance there. I think that's kind of where I'm going. There's not brilliance. There's not eye-popping. Doesn't mean he's not going to move forward. It's just – There's not that eye popping where you go, wow, you know, what do we have here? And I don't think that was the case with Fizdalal either. Fizdalal, I think the feeling was for me, this is a really talented horse, but you got to knock that stuff off, you know. Max Player, yeah, I think he also needs to go away. To make his presence felt down the road. That field, you know, I'm not going to jump on the field because that's the Shotsky was not, you know. And the Monday morning quarterback, you know, he had trouble. He had definite trouble. Made a big run to get back in the race, and then understandably flattened out. But give him some props. But my overall comment, that these all take place, and we may have a different horse win all these different preps. But by the time we're closing in, we're going to narrow it down pretty well. So I'm not in love with any of these, but you know, I'm anxious to see what's coming.
Well, we've got one of the big names back next week, Independence Hall, and Mike Trombetta is very pleased with how he settled in. They had talked about maybe going to the Risen Star, which is the first of the 50-point opportunities, but they're going to stay home for the Sam Davis. You've got the names now starting to fill in the blanks. Some of the Asmussen plans getting locked in for the Southwest. I see that Blaine Wright is headed to the Risen Star with Anno D'Or. And then, mm-hmm. of course, we're waiting for the San Vicente. I always stress Vicente, because Jay Hovde, it pleases Jay Hovde to no end that a guy from New York is able to say San Vicente.
You know what's funny? Recently,
stormed the court.
Recently, I was producing a commercial, and the guy who did the voiceover called it the San Vicente. I said, come on, man. I said, seriously, dude. I mean, I haven't heard that version of this. Let's not get too fancy, you know what I mean? And he redid it, but we had a good laugh. He's a big fan of the game, so it's not like he's just out of nowhere. But he had happened to do that voiceover himself. I go, and now I know why we pay the voiceover guy. But he came with Vicente.
There's a
well,
few of
those.
Well,
you know, there's a name that I... Frank,
I presume... Go ahead.
This is a question I could ask you because, as an announcer...
I could pretend to know.
yeah. Larry Colmus showed me one of the ways that he found out the pronunciations of words and things. He had an app that he would go to, and I thought that was incredibly interesting. And, but the name that sticks with me is Uni or Uni.
Yeah.
Which is it, Uni or Uni?
I've called her Uni, but it could be Uni. I hope it's Uni.
Uni, Uni. It's the British term for university. You're going to Uni.
That's true.
Well,
yeah.
Isn't it Uni GB? That probably answers it. So it's Uni. Thanks for that correction. Post-race corrections are one of my favorite things. At least this is months later. But
you
could be. Yeah, Uni sounded good.
I love eating Uni, and it could be Uni. The point is, I don't know. I guess the only person who knows in this case is the owner.
Right.
Is it Uni or Uni? Where did it come from?
It was Uni High, I can tell you that much. The high school near Westwood growing
there
up,
you
a,
go.
A competing high
go.
School. But good question. We won't
Steve,
have to worry about
up,
that.
Heads up on February 7th on Amazon Prime, the show All or Nothing. Going to recap the Philadelphia Eagles season. The Eagles are featured on that show. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No, thank you. Thank you.
They follow a team throughout the season, beginning.
Oh, you mentioned this. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well,
it was an interesting season. Well,
the 7th is what? That's this week. That's the end of the week.
It's coming up 4 days from now.
Well, I'll be in Vegas for NHC. Well, the on-demand. It sounds like an on-demand opportunity.
It's not like there'll be a spoiler. You know how it turns out.
Exactly. I was there. I was there for the ending.
Yeah.
Ron Nicoletti next week for Beat the Host.
Ron Nicoletti is our host to beat next week, the man from Gulfstream. And if you want to play Beat the Host and take your shot at Ron Nicoletti, go to expressbet.com, open an account, and Beat the Host is free to register, free to play, sign up for Beat the Host, and you're expected to make a $5 live win wager on one horse in each of 10 races. We've got $2,000 in weekly prizes to the top players, and then also we've got a cumulative scoring that we're keeping throughout the season. We're about 5 weeks in the books. We've got 4 to go. So if you're going to get into that cumulative mix, you're starting behind the eight ball, but it's not impossible. If you're a Kevin McFarland-type player, you could move right up the ladder quickly. So go to ExpressBet, sign up for Beat the Host, and try and top Ron Nicoletti. Anyone who beats the host automatically qualifies for a shot at the Beat the Host Championship, and that's another $25,000 in prizes. So do it today. We're open. ExpressBet.com.
You're always open. Johnny.
Operator standing by.
Exactly. Call now.
But you're supposed to. No, this is the time when you're supposed to say, but wait, there's more. Act now. And
sweep the host bonus is the more.
There was a horse that ran at Monmouth Park last year debuting as seen on TV. Those were guys.
It's a nice horse. It's a nice horse. Kelly Breen.
Yeah, those are guys that sold items on TV, just like the commercials.
And neither one of them, neither a scene on TV nor Chance It, neither one of them showed up for the Holy Bull after expecting them to show up. So I guess I don't know if they're waiting for the fountain or what they're doing.
I don't know. I was just giving a different flashback.
Steve, I know you like to keep track of this, but you knocked 33 people out of Sweep the Host competition.
I'm surprised, actually. Wow.
We're down to 84 players. There's a $3,000 bonus to anyone who can whip all 9 hosts. And we're down to 84 players with 4 weeks to go.
Cool. All right, well, then we're sort of tracking toward, maybe a dozen or so that'll go into the final weekend with a chance, and they'll split that 3,000. If there's 3 winners, they each get 1,000, etc. So, well done. I'm surprised that I knocked that many out, because really the one that I regret, the only selection I made that I was sorry about was picking Roadster over midcourt. That was just stupid. That was just plain stupid. And I'm not even sure why I did it. I just sort of because I knew midcourt was going to get bet, but then Roadster ended up going off favorite somehow.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I want to.
It's very strange.
John, I'll give you a good angle. John White morning line favorites that don't go favored
never win.
They win often.
Wait, the way around. Say it again.
When John White makes a horse the favorite,
yeah,
and the public fights him, I'll go with John White in that matchup. And we can document that because I've noticed it. Like, in other words, and there's somewhere it's kind of close. It's a 2 versus a 5-2, and let's just say it gets flip flopped.
Right.
You'll find that you might be better off just sticking with the morning line odds maker. And again, the morning line odds maker isn't giving you his pick. He's giving you his assessment of who he thinks will be favored.
Right.
But in that circumstance, and that was another example of it, where they fought the morning line. Here's what you got to think about the. You got to try to understand. This is just a side note about morning lines in general. If you know the morning line maker, and in this case you know John White, you know that he has done the necessary research to come up with what he feels is going to happen. And in that case of the rematch between Roadster and Midcourt, they had met at Del Mar and Midcourt blew him away. They're meeting again. Don't think John White doesn't know that this is Hall of Famer Bob Baffert on a card that is going to be a very big one. He's going to have had winners that day. He knows this because he's assembling this morning line after the fact. Late in the day, he knows this is happening, yet he still didn't make Roadster the favorite
in that spot.
There's something to be said for that because he's telling you that he knows that. But he still thinks the public's going to make Midcourt the favorite. And in that case, what I read it as is he's saying that Midcourt is the superior animal, that it wasn't a fluke that day, and it turned out to be true. It doesn't always work out that way, but I've actually noticed in the last couple of months sometimes, because John's such a perfectionist, he wants every morning line favorite to go favorite.
Yeah.
In fact, for him, it's better if they go favorite than if they win, because his whole thing of rating himself is based on the percentage of accurate favorites identified. But that's a good angle if you're debating late. You know, there are things to put into consideration as you're making your decision to make a bet. And that's one to keep
that's
in mind.
Great.
That
I like it.
He probably has the edge. Speaking of beat the host, one of the hosts you got to beat from
time
to time.
2 weeks
ago. Beat the morning line maker. Maybe when they make him favored over his horse, they get schooled.
Johnny, I appreciate it.
And Frank, John White's been our most successful host so far this season. He served as the host week 3, I believe it was, and he has the highest winning total so far.
It doesn't surprise me. That guy does more homework than anyone I can imagine in doing his work. He's trying to get it perfect.
Yeah.
Johnny,
Steve,
talk to you,
if you get
Monday.
Chance,
yeah.
If you get a chance off the air, see if you can get Frank Miramani to be a host maybe next year. I'm afraid to ask him myself. But.
All right. You'll be one of the hosts next year?
My last handicapping seminar here, when Quigley went to the Pegasus, I wish we could delete that video because I was pitching a shutout, and it wasn't the kind that was coming from the mound. I'm game if you need me. If you want to keep the players involved, sure, bring it on.
Thanks. Johnny D, everybody. XB Johnny D. Johnny, we'll talk to you from Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good trip. Love that trip.
No,
wish I could make it.
Well, come on. Let's go. Jump on. Jump aboard.
You think it's easy, but it's not.
We'll take a break. We're about 15 into hour 3. Jay Privman will join us. Next, Frank Miramani,
Jay
Steve
Privman,
Beck.
Formerly of the Green Sheet, if you want to go back into his past performance lines.
Wow.
Long time ago.
Wow. Was he working for the...
He was writing and handicapping.
He was writing already.
San Gabriel Valley newspaper, the Green Sheet was right in the middle. You'd pull it out and Jay Pribman's insights. We always laugh about that.
I love it. Well, Jay will tell you about it next. He's going to give us the Road to the Derby update, which he wrote up. He watches the replays of all the 3-year-old races and gives basically the extended chart style comments that are just great. And that includes for horses that were up the track. And Jay will hint to you what they what their aptitude might be down the road, going back to turf, turning back to sprints. There's lots of insight to be gleaned off the Road to the Derby reports. Jay Privman, and I think we'll take Jay, you know, right through the end of the show with Frank. It's been a little bit of a different Monday recap, but it's been a lot of fun. Hope you're enjoying. Back to Santa Anita after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
At the track or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Serious.